speak at an AA meeting and share my strength, hope, and experience. I've never been to this meeting, and my friend picked me up because I don't drive at night very much now, because I can't see too well in the dark. My journey began a long time ago. I get sober in 1972, the 29th of April, and I haven't found it necessary to pick up a drink since I surrendered to the first step. If you'd ever told me I'd end up an alcoholic, I'd have said you're out of your mind. I was 29 when I came in our fellowship, and I had everything that said I was successful. I had a middle income lifestyle, beautiful home. I had one child. I remember my very first drink. It was I'm a Scotsman. And my mother was a very domineering, controlling female. My dad was very quiet and passive. And I was a mama's boy. And I remember the very first time I had my very first drink. It was an act of defiance, probably, because my mother's father was an alcoholic, and he died in World War II from this disease. So she hated alcoholism because she was raised by one very violent alcoholic, abusive to his children and his wife. So she hated alcohol with a passion. The only time I saw my mother ever drink was maybe New Year's, a little glass of sherry. That was the extent of our drinking. My dad would have a drink occasionally, but he definitely was not an alcoholic. So I went to a wedding reception this night, and I used to watch people and observe them. When they drank, they seemed to have a great time. I was very introverted, very shy, and very quiet kid growing up. I was a good kid. I did very well in school. I didn't cause any waves. I was a good Christian kid. Went to church and Sunday school every Sunday. Didn't swear, didn't smoke, didn't do shit. I was a goody two-shoes. I think it caused me some issues later in my life. So anyhow, I remember the very first drink I ever had. And of course, being Scottish, we drank a lot of whiskey. I remember the first drink tasted terrible. But after three or four or five or six, I didn't give a shit how it tasted. It seemed to change me. It made me very comfortable in my own skin, probably for the very first time. I lost my inhibitions. I could talk, I could associate. And of course, I should have known from that first experience that I probably might have had a trouble with it down the road, because I had my first blackout. Don't remember anything. Just remember coming to and having to face the wrath of my mother the next morning. So that was how it began. I always wanted to immigrate to this country since I was a young kid. Used to watch all these Hollywood movies, and they showed all this lavish stuff. It's all bullshit, I know that now, all Hollywood bullshit. But I believe that's the way America was. Everybody was well off and lived in big houses and had all this stuff. And I thought maybe I would like to immigrate. So I was 20 years old when I made that decision to come to this country. My mother's uncle came here in 1945 after the war. During the war, the British subs would pull in before America was in the war and refuel and go back out to the Atlantic. And while he was in port this time, he met this young girl, 17-year-old girl, and knocked her up. And after the war, he came back, as people did back then, and married her and came here. And at that time, as an immigrant, you needed a sponsor. You just couldn't come to this country back then, like they've been doing lately. And I remember going to the American consulate. I had all this paperwork to fill out, all these information. And my father said, "Dad, Jack, do you really want to go there? Look at all the questions they're asking you, personal questions. Do you really want to go there?" I said, "Yeah, I'm going." So I wrote to my uncle, and he became my sponsor. And he lived in King of Prussia in 1962. Now, if you probably don't remember, you're too young to remember, King of Prussia 1962 was the boondocks. There was nothing there, nothing. It was a two-lane highway. It was a little shopping center, a little movie theater, and one restaurant on 202. And here I was, a city boy. I was raised in a city like Philadelphia. So I end up in the boondocks in King of Prussia 1962. Not quite what I imagined it to be. And this uncle, I believe, looking back, probably suffered from PS, from the war. He was crazy. He was a crazy man. Very angry man. Very difficult to get along with. And I wasn't used to living like in an environment like that. So after a couple of months living with him, I just couldn't tolerate it any longer. And I left. I worked in King of Prussia. I got a job in a little construction company, local construction company in King of Prussia. And I would walk from Brandywine Village to near where the mall is now to go to work every day. And I remember walking past this big house, and it said, "Rooms for rent." And after I left my uncle, we had a battle down the shore, and I left, and I was on my own for the very first time. And I went into this place, and I rented a room. For the very first time, I was completely on my own in a strange country, strange culture. Didn't know anybody, didn't know nothing. It was very difficult for me because I'd always been with my family. So I started going to these places. I used to go up to the Upper Marion High School every Friday. They had a dance. I was 20 and I was young looking. And I'd go to this Friday night dance at the Upper Marion High School. And Scottish people love to dance. It's part of our culture. So I go there, and this girl, I saw across the room, and she had just come from the West Coast, from California. And, you know, you ever meet somebody who was like at love at first sight, the connection was there between us. And we started dating. Started to take her back quite a bit. So I was here about a year at the time, and I got a letter in the mail, and I opened it up, and it said that, "Greetings." I said, "What the hell is this?" I was drafted. The army drafted me. I wasn't even a citizen. I was here only a little over a year at the time. I thought, Christ. When I went to the American consulate before I came here, they said, "Well, you know, we have a draft in the United States, but it's highly improbable that you will be drafted." Son of a bitch has lied to me. They got my ass real quick. That's how you get rid of immigrants. You draft them, you put them in the fucking front line. That's another thing I started to do when I get sober. I never said fuck until I get sober. And I'll never forget the first time I ever used that word. I said, "That's what I've been missing." What an expression. It does so much for me. Well, now I have a bad habit. I'm trying to work on my vocabulary, in fact, but I still swear quite a bit, but not, I'm working on it. It can be perfect. AA changed me quite a bit, and that was one of the things. I started to curse. So anyhow, thank God I was stationed in Germany. Vietnam was just in the beginning, the throes of the war in Vietnam. So I was so blessed and fortunate that I was stationed in Europe at the time, in Germany. I love Germany, I had a great time over there. Didn't like the army, but I did have the opportunity to get to know the German people and the culture, and I really enjoyed that, being there. I still didn't drink a lot. We'd go to the guest houses and the places to dance, and I started to drink German beer. Now, American beer tastes like piss, believe me, compared to German beer. So I never liked to taste the beer here, never tasted like the beer, but I did like the German beer. So while I was over there, I mean, I'm dating myself, you're just kids. There used to be a song called Dear John, and that's when a lot of GIs used to get letters from their girlfriends here dumping them. And I got a Dear John letter, and I was heartbroken. So what does a good alcoholic do? I didn't want to feel the pain or the emotions. I started to drink considerably a lot. I went into blackout. I was found wandering around, and thank God the guys took me back to the cassette camp where I was stationed. Then I came back to the States, and her and I made it up for a little bit. And we were going to be married. We'd set the date, and she had gone and left and moved to Cincinnati before I came back. And then she dumped me a month before the wedding. No ever reason given, just disappeared out of my life. And I believe from that point on until I came in our fellowship, I drank alcoholically just to escape from the pain and the emotions that I couldn't handle. One of my buddies was stationed over in Germany. He was a chaplain's assistant. Him and I had separated, and I didn't know he was stationed in Germany. And one day I'm in a little village, and he's on the podium giving a speech. He was a chaplain's assistant, and his camp wasn't too far from where I was stationed, so we became reunited of sorts. And he had a picture of his girlfriend, his fiancée at the time. And he'd say to me, well, if things don't work out between you and Cheryl, Ronnie, who's got plenty of girlfriends. I said, yeah, that'll be the day. Never dreaming that that day would come where she dumped me. So anyhow, he was getting married. I was invited to his wedding in New York. And I didn't want to go to weddings. That was the last thing I wanted to go to weddings. But since he was such a good friend and I was in the wedding party, I felt I should go. And he called me up and he said, well, one of Ronnie's girlfriends is coming up to the wedding. And she's coming to Norristown to visit our grandparents. So why don't you two get together and come up to the wedding together? So I was still drinking at the time, and I remember meeting our grandparents before I met her. And then I went and met Kathy, and we went up to the wedding together on the train. Because I had an old car, it was a Corvair, if you don't probably even remember that shitting car. And it was so in bad shape that in order to start, I had to open the trunk, I had to do all this shit. There was no way in hell I could drive up to New York and take that girl up with me to the wedding, no way. So meanwhile at the wedding, I kept disappearing, sure, a good alcoholic. On the train up, I disappeared for quite a while, and the what do they call these, where you can drink in a train? But I forget what they call them. But I got drunk on the way up to the wedding. And of course she's looking at me and I'm half loaded and making bullshit lies and excuses why, you know, I was doing. So anyhow, after she graduated, she went to Beaver Falls, Geneva College. After she graduated near Pittsburgh, the job opportunities for what she wanted to do was back east. And she came back east and lived with her grandparents, and she got a job at McNeil Labs at the time. And her and I started dating on a regular basis. And of course, I drank like a fish the whole time we were dating. How that poor woman put up with me, I'll never know. And I thought, well, maybe marriage will settle me then. Maybe that'd be responsible. Not really loving her like I loved the other one. And I thought, well, I asked her to marry me. And the poor girl said, yeah. poor Kathy. So anyway, we get married. And life went on. I kept drinking. The progressive of the illness was getting worse, naturally, with time. We were no longer invited to parties because you didn't know how I was going to react or behave. Sometimes I couldn't predict my behavior. And I used to get very angry in blackouts. I used to break things, break doors, punch walls, do crazy shit. And this poor girl, God bless her, she put up with my crap. And then in January 1972, I came out of a blackout. I lay on my living room floor. Now, I was an atheist by that time. I believed in nothing, especially spirituality or church. My Christian attitudes has long gone. So there was no religious background at that point. And I had a moment of clarity that they talk about in the alcoholic's life. And I lay on that floor, came out of the blackout temporarily, and I said the simplest prayer that most alcoholics I've heard said before, God help me, I need help. My wife, God bless her, I believe that was God's intervention, even back then. She knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous, nothing. She called the old Norristown group. She called that number. And back then, they used to 12-step you. There was no rehabs, there was no halfway houses or whatever they call them now. That was non-existent back then. And two men came that night to 12-step me. Now, I was a top-shelf drinker. I ended up with a cheap gallon of wine. I would have drank anything for the effect. And the bottle of wine was still lying on the table. And they said I chased them around the table, and they chased me around the table, because they were trying to take that bottle away from me. I don't remember that, thank God. And the next night they said, we'll have somebody pick Jack up and take him to a meeting. So the next night, I'll never forget him, they're all dead now, these people I met, they're all dead now. John Finnegan, Irish-American, came and picked me up. And on the way to the meeting, he started to talk about his alcoholism. And for the very first time in my whole life, I seemed to relate to this man that I'd never met or known before. I tried clergy, I tried psychiatry, I tried everything else, and nothing ever worked. And here's this total stranger talking to me and sharing his alcoholic story, some of it, to the meeting. Now, I was a social snob back then. I was really a snob. And thank God, he took me to a special meeting. It was called White Marsh. They were all elegant, well-educated group of people. And thank God, he took me there to the first meeting. And I was weighed about 120 pounds, soaking wet. I was shaking like a leaf. I sat at the back of the meeting. I didn't say nothing. And that was it. Then, my next experience, I went to Norristown. Now, the contrast between White Marsh and the Norristown group were entirely different. So I sat at that group. Of course, I took everybody's inventory. They had their lights shut off. They did all kinds of bad stuff. And I'm 20. I'm a young guy, 29. And I'm sitting with all these old men, 40-year-old men. Back then, that was old. And I'm not relating one iota to their, I did not relate to them one iota. But I went anyhow. I lasted 3 months and decided that I was going to take a trip back home to see my family. Went back, and I'd been without alcohol for 3 months. but I was not sober in the sense I know what sobriety is today. I just hadn't picked up a drink. And my cousin and I, my cousin picked me up, and they took me to a beautiful country inn in Scotland. The fireplace, the ambience was just wonderful. The tartan rugs. I'll have a drink. And before I left there, I got booze to go. So I was off to the races in that short visit. Had my last drink coming back from that trip on a jumbo jet. Apparently, I disappeared the whole flight. I don't know where I went, but my wife couldn't find me. I was gone, a six-hour flight. God knows what I did or where I spoke to or what I did. Came out of the airport in New York. The luggage, you know how the luggage goes? Like, well, I couldn't get the luggage. I was sick as a dog. I was drunk. And the luggage kept swimming around, and I kept trying to pick up that luggage. Went back to Norriston. Now, the old-timers, they read me well. They knew I was going to get drunk. And I probably was the first time I got honest. And I told them, which was no surprise to them, I said, I got drunk. And I would say that's probably the beginning that I started to realize that I was an alcoholic. It was a disease, not a disgrace. I didn't cause it, I had it. The reason why, it doesn't matter anymore. Childhood issues, all that shit, it doesn't matter. I'm an alcoholic. And I finally took the first step. And I realized intuitively and instinctively, the first step to me had to be unconditional surrender to whatever would have to happen to me in my sobriety. And I'm so grateful that I've done that. And that's how I took the first step. Went to Norristown Group. They became the best people in my whole life. I was insane for my first five years. I was a raving moon. I was crazy. And not once did these people judge me or condemn me. They accepted me with all my insanity and the way I was. And they loved me until I could love myself. My first sponsor approached me. I wasn't about to ask anybody to ask me, especially another man. I'm going to ask somebody for help. And I would sit with all the old ladies back then, because I was a mama's boy. And I liked all the old ladies. I sit with all the old ladies. And Jack came up. He said, there's Jack with all his mommies again. I went to knock him in his ass. And he became my very first sponsor. I will never forget that man as long as I live. He taught me the early good rudiments of early recovery. He taught me very well. It was almost like a father-son connection I made. So anyhow, I went to Norristown. Then I went to other meetings. I started to branch off. I followed the suggestions that they told me reluctantly, but I did tell me because they knew how to stay sober. They were old-timers, and they had the wisdom of sobriety, and I had to learn from them how to stay sober one day at a time. They're all gone now. I still miss them. I get kind of nostalgic in my old age. But I'll never forget them. They were a great part in my recovery. They were a great group of men and women back then. So as time went by, I branched out to other groups. I got involved. I did GSR, did group level commitments, and did what I had to do. I also suffered from undiagnosed bipolar disorder. And I suffered terrible mental illness. And I never picked up a drink. I was crazy sometimes. Didn't know how I was going to react because of this illness. And I suffered a lot of years with this, you know, mental illness. Never found it necessary to pick up a drink, no matter what I went through. I was 20 years sober when I finally, this depression got so severe, I got suicidal. And I put myself in a mental hospital, 20 years sober. Get this, 20 years sober. I finally get diagnosed, I get help with a mental illness, and that's when I truly was able to live and apply what AA had taught me about the 12 steps, the tools that would enable me to change and become the person that I am today. It was a long, slow, painful process to go through all the changes that I had to do. And life went on after that. I was still very active in AA. It was, back in the day, it was very simple back then. Today AA has changed a lot since I came in. I don't particularly like the changes, but it is what it is, and I have to accept the fact this is the way AA is today. The AA that I get sober in is history. So when you look at somebody like me, you're looking at the history of AA, because I get sober in another era where AA was simple, tough. They didn't throw the steps down your throat. They didn't throw the big book down your throat. They just told you, don't pick up one drink for one day at a time. Go to meetings, practice the steps to the best of your ability. I went to step meetings, I went to tradition meetings, I went to all the meetings that were available at that time. So, what can I tell you? I don't think I can speak a whole hour, but I'll do the best I can, because how are you going to cover 51 years of sobriety? I was 29, I'm 81 now. I can't believe I've lived this long. I had two heart attacks, survived them, didn't think about drinking. The last 4 years have been pretty tough because my wife died five years ago, and we'd been married almost 50 years. We had three kids. The kids are all grown up, very successful in life, doing very well. None of them have this affliction, thank God. And they're all doing well, three grandkids. So my whole life changed when she died. I had to move from the apartment that I loved because for once I couldn't afford to live in there any longer. And so I moved into this retirement community. It's 55 and over in Harleysville. You picked me up there. It's a nice facility, but it's very depressing to me, because every other day they're taking somebody out in an ambulance and they don't come back. It's very depressing to me. But it's a nice, reasonable apartment. The rent's affordable to my income, which drastically dropped when Kathy died. So everything changed. My whole life changed. My little dog, Molly, was 14, and she died. And I loved that dog. It was like she was my child. So a lot of great losses within the last several years, but I have to have an attitude of gratitude, because what I've been left with, I'm relatively healthy for my age group, which is amazing. I didn't think I'd ever live this long. And I'm still active. I have wonderful friends, dearest friends I've ever known in AA. My best buddy, I was supposed to go to Florida to visit, but because of this injury and health reasons, I couldn't go. Do you know, he flew up just for the weekend, just to visit me. That's the kind of friend he is. When I go down there, they treat me royally. He pays my way down. He takes me out fancy. He's got money. He's very wealthy, but he's a very kind man. I love him. He loves me. Then I met another young fellow. He's 49 years old, and he's become like a son to me. He takes good care of me, he looks out for me, he's been very generous, he's very wealthy, but very generous to me. He's helped me out in so many different ways. And I've got a lot of young friends now that I've developed in AA, younger people, and I get along great with them. They seem to respect me and like me and respect my quality of sobriety, and they said they need me there because I can teach them how to stay sober one day at a time, and that's what I've continually done. So I don't think I can say much more, because I kind of covered everything that I can think about. I'm sorry I can't speak for an hour. I never spoke for an hour in my whole life, but So I'm sorry, but this is the best I can do, and this is my experience. And I hope somebody gets something out of what I said. But I know getting sober in the beginning was the most difficult thing I ever had to do. Now I go to meetings tonight, and I call them 90-day wonders. They found God, they did the 12 steps and life's a bowl of cherries, and they're not staying sober because they're full of shit. Getting sober is tough. When I used to go to the meetings in the old days, the first thing they would say, does anybody feel like picking up a drink? And the hands would go up. The people that think about drinking and don't talk about drinking generally get drunk. That's what I've noticed. When you're hurting and you've got to talk about what's going on in your life, you got to get honest with yourself. You don't have to sound good. You just have to be sober. And you got to share what's going on in your life. And that's what I've done all these years. I've shared the good, the bad, and the ugly, and I still do that. And that's one of the reasons I'm still sober today. I'm not here to sound good. I'm here to be sober, and I'm here to share my experience with you people. And maybe some of you can relate to some of it, some of the feelings. Most of the feelings are the same. That's the identification as alcoholics. We all feel the same way. We all have the same emotions. We all have the same feelings. And that's when I started to relate to others in AA, when I could listen to them and say, I know what they're talking about, because I feel that way. And that's the best I can do. I'm sorry I couldn't speak for a whole hour, but he told me it was an hour. I said, I can't speak for an hour. But I think I've covered most of it. So, maybe we can talk or share something, I don't know if that's possible. That's what we used to do anyhow, share at meetings. So I'm done. Thanks for listening.
I think we're just closing up, Jack. We're just doing a little early.
I'm sorry.
No need to apologize.
Yeah.
You're good to go.
And the group would like to thank Jack again for sharing his experience with us tonight. And the group would also like to remind everyone who needs a sponsor, please, in need of a sponsor, so please see someone after the meeting. Would anyone who has knowledge, working knowledge of the 12 steps, please raise your hand. And we will help us close with the Lord's Prayer. Jack?
Yeah. For those who care to join us, we'll close the meeting by saying the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, power, and glory, forever and ever. I did pretty good then. 45 minutes. I did all right. Thank you very much. Thanks for being here. Thank you. I know you.
Yeah, I saw you up at
Dublin.
The telephone.
Yeah.
I also saw you on Tuesday at that event.
Yeah. I like that.
You got some.
That was a good meeting, right?
I like that meeting.
Yeah. I've been going over there a couple of times recently.
Yeah, I think I'll go back.
It's definitely a different format.
I like it. Everybody shared a lot.
Yeah, it's good. It gets the people out there.
Thank you so much for sharing. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I couldn't speak for a whole while.
That's all right. Okay. Five more words, right? Thank you. And then they were I was just curious how different. Usually it's on the list.
For my case in the 90s.
Okay.
Do you have like?
Yes, that's what I hear.
Yeah.
Whoever.
Okay. So I am in the middle of like, I just like literally. Months, not true. Maybe I'll do that one week because I was going to do a women's meeting tomorrow that I've been to before, but I totally will try something different.
Yeah. So what is that?
That is, it's at the Lansdale.
Okay.
At one of the clubhouses.
Okay.
Which that's my main, that's where I first started going. It's different though, like then you wind up like venturing out to different places and you see like these different kinds of people and
yeah.
And I'm ready, like I just had a group weekend and like it's time to get in and do it right.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
There's like a lot of like, I mean there's good people there. So I go to the, I actually went to the clubhouse.
In Lansdale?
Yeah,
yes.
What I was saying about like people sharing about things being good. Something like my
good time, you are.
Over the corn?
Yes.
Who's all on Zoom?
I don't know, there's a couple people, looks like those.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I'm helping with karate, so I don't do karate, especially me. So I just shadow him. But it goes from 6:50 to 7:50, so I put this at 8:30, so I was like, I've never been there, I tried it, and then I get a like, oh my gosh. So, all right, awesome.
All right, you're going to hang on to the money for Perry?
Yeah, cool.
Alright, well, good night, everybody.
Good night. See you. 7-7. Bye. That works.
Good, thank you guys for taking care of the meeting. Let's get started. I've been up here a little long. I said the attendance has been terrible. I'm guessing the Phillies game tonight.
Yeah, I was fine. I was normally I'd be like, but you know, I was like, it's all good. Plus Jack's older. No, I didn't expect him to speak now, but when you have somebody like that speak, you're just soaking in 50 years of smart.
Yeah,
it's not really trying to get an hour.
I just met him the first time. I guess it was.
Are you putting it back top of
my head? I'm going up at Little Zion.
Oh,
and I was like, 50 years? It was crazy.
It's a long time, man. Normally, sometimes he'll speak about how he was just trying to chill out.
He said something pretty funny last time. Remember what he said at the men's meeting about his sandwich, Brian? She fucked my sandwich up.
Yeah, he does awesome. When he shares. When he has like five minutes,
yeah.
It's like he just, but like, he goes into old head mode where he just like says anything.
Yeah.
You still need a ride then?